SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Joe Pizzapia, and welcome to Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid. It is me, it is Davis Maddock, and it's you. Craig Mish will be here for hour two, but you got an hour of Joey P in front of you first, and we got great stuff to talk about today. We've got some fantasy baseball things for you. We're going to talk about some ADPs that are very close. We're also going to talk a lot of football because Davis Maddock, it was a big signing. The Cowboys took care of business, and I know you got that fake jersey behind you, that Dak Prescott number four. And I know that probably just went up in value along with everything else related to Dak Prescott. So welcome, my friend. How are you? And how you feeling about that Dak Prescott contract?
Feeling great. You know, Dak, one of my favorite athletes ever, a great Dallas Cowboy. And I'm very happy that he will continue to be a great Dallas Cowboy, you know, in perpetuity, at least for the next 4 years. Very happy to have Dak locked into that contract.
Now, I got to ask you, after the contract news came out, did you go outside into the lawn and did you do a little of the, you know, the Dak Prescott, that hip thing, you know, the hip warm out? Because I'd like to see you do the hip warm up, you know, before the shows. I feel like that's good. It kind of loosens you up before FST starts, right?
I didn't do that. I went to eBay and I bought a very expensive Dak Prescott PSA 10 rookie card. had to make sure to secure the investment. Had to have you know, another reason to root along for Dak in the 2021 season.
All right, well, we're going to break down that contract, what it means for the Cowboys, for the cap, for their future, for the East in segment two here of the show. But first, let's get to some more headlines because it wasn't the only thing that happened in sports yesterday. So Les Miles was fired. That's right. Les Miles fired by KU. Kentucky moving on there from Les Miles. Titans send former first-round pick Isaiah Wilson to Miami. The Patriots trade for left tackle Trent Brown, trying to reinforce that offensive line that's already pretty good, but it's had some changes in the last year or two. And Jeffrey Lurie backs Jalen Hurts as the Eagles QB. And I know we're going to talk a lot more about Dak Prescott in a second, but I kind of want to touch on this Jalen Hurts thing first, because it feels like that's the direction they should be going. I think you and I as fantasy people would like to see that be the direction. There does seem to be a narrative going out there, though, with a lot of prominent fantasy analysts right now I see on the Twitter machine, where people are already kind of anointing Jalen Hurts as a top 10 fantasy quarterback. Now, it's nice to have the backing of the ownership. It's nice that they want to go forward with him. But Davis, I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think that's putting things a little bit too quickly here for Jalen Hurts? I understand it's very exciting, you know, the ability to throw the football, the ability to run, the athleticism, all that's exciting. But quarterback's pretty deep nowadays. Would you put him in that top 10 already going into 2021? Are you somebody who is a little bit more like, well, maybe he's a QB1, maybe more of a high-end QB2 just because of the learning curve that might still exist?
No, for fantasy football, he is the quarterback 7. I think over a full season, I think he'll probably rush. I mean, it really would not surprise me to see him put up Lamar Jackson-esque rushing numbers. Now, he won't have the same insane yards per carry as Lamar because he's not as explosive in the open field. You know, Lamar, the spin moves and the stiff arms and the jukes, like Lamar is electric in that sense. And Jalen is a little bit less electric and a little bit more determined. He's more of like a Cam Newton style rusher than a Lamar Jackson style rusher. But I think, you know, 150 rushing attempts for Jalen Hurts, pretty well within the range of outcomes over the course of the season. I think he'll score a lot of rushing touchdowns. And, you know, the Eagles passing weapons last year, they were just all injured and banged up, but they now it should be Dallas Goedert, Alshon Jeffrey, Jalen Reagor, Greg Ward. I mean, he has, I think, a good group of receivers at his disposal. Would not surprise me to see them draft another wide receiver in this draft. Would not surprise me to see them go after Corey Davis or Juju Smith-Schuster in free agency. I think that, you know, it's total rocket ships, wheels up for Jalen Hurts in terms of fantasy. Now, I think the Eagles might struggle a little bit, you know, wins, losses with Jalen Hurts in year one. I would not surprise me to see him again, you know, kind of turn the ball over, struggle a little bit with interceptions, but he is, you know, obviously going to give them, I think, a better chance to win than Carson Wentz would have, and definitely going to give them a better chance to win than, you know, Nate Sudfeld or you know, whatever their other backup quarterback options would be. And I don't think that the right move for them as a franchise is spending a high draft pick on, you know, Justin Fields or Zach Wilson.
Okay, well, what about the offensive line? Because I know Nick Sirianni's come in there, and it's going to be a new playbook, a new regime here, as Doug Peterson's gone from Philadelphia. But in your opinion, what's the learning curve there for Jalen Hurts? And do you think that they're going to be able to, whether it's via draft or free agency, fix some of these problems with the offensive line? Because otherwise, are we not setting ourselves up for failure potentially with Hurts if we don't fix some of the problems at that line? Now, granted, he can get out there in space a little bit better than Carson Wentz, but is that any concern for you?
It's not really a concern for me, because I think if they're smart, they'll do for Jalen Hurts, you know, what the Bills did for Josh Allen. They will build an offense around his strengths instead of trying to put, you know, a square peg into a round hole. That would be the intelligent thing for them to do. And I have faith in them to pursue to that end.
That's my favorite thing to do. I just take the pegs and I make them go wherever they need to go. If I wanted to go in that spot, that's where that spot's going. All of those things, that's definitely the way we do it. And from one quarterback in the NFC East to another, we're going to talk about that Dak Prescott contract, because it has a lot of ramifications, obviously, not just short-term and long-term for the Cowboys, but also for that division. So we're going to talk about the FanDuel odds, we're going to talk about the fantasy implications, everything, because we're just getting started here on Fantasy Sports today. So stick around with us. Stay with us here on SiriusXM 2 and all the other channels we're on. So we'll be right back right after this with more Fantasy Sports Today.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Fantasy Sports Today, right here on Sports Grid. Joe Pizzapia, Davis Maddock, talking Dak Prescott, big contract signing. And look, this was probably a foregone conclusion. I mean, if the Dallas Cowboys decided that they wanted to move on from Dak Prescott and start with the veterans, bringing in the Fitzpatricks, I mean, they already had Dalton there last year. That didn't work out. It was probably just going to be a fait accompli that he would eventually end up here back in a long-term deal, because if you don't have the quarterback in the NFL, then you really don't have a shot to compete. And they've got the quarterback. And I, like Davis, am a big fan of Dak Prescott. You look at the stats, I got to tell you, man, it's some crazy stuff there. Career stats are very good. You look at the pace he was on last year in that first month of the season, the guy was outstanding. I had him in a couple super flex leagues. I was riding high, Davis. I was feeling really good about the value I got for Dak Prescott where I drafted him. And then, of course, you had the injury. So of this $160 million here, $126 million is guaranteed. So that's a fair amount of cash. We all know that. I guess here's my question for you. How does this hamstring the Dallas Cowboys now going forward with the rest of this roster? Because we all know that defense was a major issue last year. You could chalk it up to coaching. You could chalk it up potentially to game plan. You could say personnel. But it feels like a bit of all of the above. So in your opinion now, how does this kind of put them in a little bit of a box? Because if you're paying Dak this much now, over these next few years, how can you afford to really address the defense, and how creative can they get to fix this? Because if they want to be a playoff team, this is something that really needs to be addressed.
So I mean, the real problem with the Dallas Cowboys salary cap is not paying Dak. You got to pay Dak. When you get a quarterback who plays this well, you pay them. I mean, this is just the rule of the NFL. You pay Lamar, you pay Dak, you pay Josh Allen, you pay those guys what they ask because they play the most unreplaceable position in football. Where the Cowboys have gotten themselves in trouble, paying Ezekiel Elliott that awful contract, you know, $15 million a year to be basically a replacement level player at the most replaceable position. Kind of what they decided is they would rather pay Zeke and Amari Cooper than they would pay Byron Jones. Now, I think the decision to pay Amari Cooper is fine. You know, the defense, it's not great, right? Let's just be honest about the Dallas Cowboys defense. It's not great. It's not going to be great in 2021. It should be better. Just because it's very hard for defense, like defensive performance year over year is not very static in the NFL. Defenses that are great find themselves struggling the next year. They're very sensitive to injuries, very sensitive to guys just not performing as well. And they do have some guys on the roster who are on club-controlled contracts on defense, guys like Leighton Vander Esch, guys like Tristan Hill, guys like Neville Gallimore, who are fine producers on defense. Now, they're going to have to continue to draft defense. I think that obviously defensive side of the ball should be something they are focusing on in free agency. I don't think they are hamstrung by Dak's contract on the defensive side of the ball, though. It's Zeke's contract that's keeping them from signing great defensive players because the Dak contract is a good decision. The Zeke contract is a bad decision.
Well, is something going to give there then? Because I was kind of surprised that they gave as much money to Amari Cooper as they did. And then I was even more surprised that they went with Zeke. So are we looking in the next year or so that something's going to break there with one of them? Like somebody's going to get cut or moved on or something's going to change there in that dynamic that we're looking at a Cowboys offense is going to maybe look a little bit different in a year from now at this time?
So in 2021, Amari counts for $28 million against the cap, but they can get out of his contract after 2021 for, I think, $4 million of dead cap. So basically, if Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb continue to progress the way they have, you know, those guys are, I mean, CeeDee Lamb is great to me, and Michael Gallup mm-hmm. is a very strong number two. They can get out of that Amari Cooper contract in what will be his age 28 season. And I think they probably will get out of that Amari Cooper contract. I think they will opt out of the contract at that point. And they're also at that same time is an out in Ezekiel Elliott's contract where he still is a big dead cap hit. But in 2022, it goes from being $24 million of dead cap to being $10 million in dead cap if they move on from Zeke in 2022. So I think in 2022, you see both Elliott and Cooper's contract come off the books. Then it's all defense, offensive line. That then probably they give CeeDee Lamb his extension in 2022, and right. they can decide on Michael Gallup this offseason. And I think they probably will also extend Michael Gallup this offseason. And then you kind of have your offensive foundation. You have your quarterback signed, so it's all about defense and offensive line.
Well, you and I are in agreement there on CeeDee Lamb. We're both very high on him. And that short window that we had where him and Dak were playing together looked very, very good, like very tasty. Looked like something's going to be there for a potentially really long time. So it's great that they are going to be together now. So your long-term dynasty assets of CeeDee Lamb, I think, got a nice boost from this Dak Prescott signing. And, of course, the rest of this offense as well, because Dak was playing tremendous. They were scoring points at will. They just couldn't stop anybody, which brings us to the question about the NFC East. The nation's worst division last year in football. And, you know, I think it's getting better. Certainly the Washington football team with that defensive line is tremendous. You could see, though, going into this year, the FanDuel odds have the Washington football team who ended up winning this division at plus 300. The Dallas Cowboys, the favorite at minus 105. The Eagles at plus 440 and the Giants at plus 500. Now, you know, the Cowboys, and I know Craig always talks about this on the show, there's always attacks on the Cowboys, right? Do you think that the signing of Dak Prescott and a healthy Dak Prescott is enough to warrant them being that prohibitive of a favorite? Because I think that's a pretty strong favorite right now. A big gap there, whereas defensively, you know, Washington has figured things out. Now, maybe this Washington needle will move when the quarterback situation gets ironed out. I think we're still kind of waiting to see where that breaks. But we have to live in the now. So living in the now, what are your thoughts and feelings about this Dak Prescott signing and the effect it has potentially on this line? And do you see any other kind of movement coming here as Washington figures out that QB situation.
I mean, if the Cowboys had had Dak healthy last year, even with that defense, they would have won the division anyways. As it stood, they went into week 17 being like even money to make the playoffs. When you look back at their season, they went into week 17, that game against the Giants. If they had won that game and the Eagles had lost that game, it's been a little while, but I think that was the scenario. The Cowboys would have been the division winner and they would have made the playoffs. So the Giants, I do not think are a serious playoff contending team. I think that their coaching situation is poor. I think their offensive line is poor. I don't think highly of Daniel Jones at all. I do think that if the best bet in this division is the Eagles, if you look at their odds, because again, I am a Jalen Hurts believer, not a believer in the Washington football team. They let Alex Smith go. So their plan heading into 2021 at quarterback is probably, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Teddy Bridgewater, Andy Dalton, you know, kind of that third tier of veteran quarterbacks. I mean, maybe they just go in with Tyler Heinicke, and I don't think that would be a particularly advantageous decision from them. So, yeah, I mean, the Cowboys are going to win this division if Dak stays healthy, though. Like, the true odds should be, like, minus 150, minus 200 or something, because they are clearly, I think, the best team in this division. If you look at any projection system for football, I mean, the Cowboys are going to have the best projected offense of anyone because they just are so deep. I mean, Michael Gallup is their third wide receiver. Like, they're just so good on offense. It's hard to lose games when you're that good on offense.
Hard to lose games, but tough to win playoff games when you're bad on defense. So real quick, you know, we're trying to figure that out. Davis, is Daniel Jones the quarterback of the future for the Giants? Is this kind of like the last fork in the road here for him this season?
I mean, yeah, if he is bad this year, they will replace him. I'm not a big Daniel Jones believer. He's kind of in that Sam Darnold netherworld region for me. He turns the ball over too much.
Yeah, that is certainly true. He's had a lot of fumble issues, a lot of turnover issues in his short career. We'll see with Saquon healthy if that makes a change for him in 2021. We come back. We're going to shift gears from NFL to MLB, talk a little win totals here. It's time to do a little spotlight on the Chicago Cubs, a team that looks like they're in a rebuild, a retool. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's not that pretty. We come back. We're going to try to tell you what to do with it all right here on SportsGrid on Fantasy Sports Today.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Just a few years ago, the Chicago Cubs were World Series champions and the sky looked like the limits and it seemed like they could do no wrong. Well, here we are in 2021 and I think the feel-good vibes are over for the Chicago Cubs. We welcome you back here to Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. And Davis, you know, this regime has changed now. You've seen Theo Epstein's jump ship and the Cubs are now in a spot where some of the young players that they thought were going to come through and be that game changer, they weren't necessarily all as good as they thought they might be, but on top of which, too, you're getting some of the big-time talent aging out, a ton of free agents this year going into this season. Basically, all the good remaining players on this team could very well be gone at the end of the year if they indeed tend to turn this thing over completely. So let's take a look at the Chicago Cubs and what that lineup's going to look like. You're going to have Ian Happ, which from a fantasy perspective is a player that if he hits at the top of this order, I definitely want on my teams. Love him at the top of the order. Going to score a ton of runs. Also is going to have a fair amount of power. He's been very good the last few years, kind of quietly, just kind of finding his way after being a very highly touted prospect. Then you have Rizzo hitting the two hole, coming off an okay season. Again, don't want to look too much in that. But Rizzo and Bryant were these two cornerstone pieces. And Bryant has dealt with his share of injuries as well. Wilson Contreras, the catcher, hitting fourth. And Jock Peterson, newly acquired from the Dodgers. He's going to be hitting the fifth spot, followed by Javi Baez, also coming off a down year. Do you see a trend here, boys and girls, as I'm talking about this team? Jason Hayward at seven and Nico Hoerner, the young second baseman, at the eighth spot. So when you're looking at this order here, what jumps out to you? Because, Davis, obviously there's talent, there's power, but what's missing here? What is it about this Cubs lineup? Is it just a matter of not making enough contact, or is it just a matter of maybe these players just kind of hitting that next part of their career where, I don't want to say the downside already for some of them, but starting to feel like maybe not as much of the upside as we used to hope that they were going to bring?
Well, I mean, to begin with, I've just never been a Chris Bryant guy. Like, you're a big fantasy baseball guy. You know, when Joey Gallo came up, he was a third baseman. And, yep. You know, Gallo versus Bryant was like an argument that a lot of people had. And I was always team Gallo, right? I was always, I want that dude with 80 raw power. Like, that's the guy that I like. And Chris Bryant has had a very good career, won the World Series, obviously. But like, Bryant and Rizzo are kind of, to me, they're like from another generation, right? High on base percentage, high batting average. They don't strike out a ton, but they're not lacing bombs, right? These are 25 home run guys, not 40 home run guys. And the way that baseball has evolved at those corner infield spots at first and third base, like, that's not really what you want. You want your second and third baseman to be, or your second baseman and your shortstop and your outfielders to be good defense, 20 home runs style guys. And looking at this Cubs lineup, the only guy I view as like a true power first hitter is Jock Peterson. And I guess you could argue that for Javi Baez as well, but he was so poor last year and he strikes out so much of the time that I don't necessarily know if he's like a star in Major League Baseball. So, and really the Cubs problem is they've decided we are not dumping money into this organization anymore. We won the World Series. So now we just want to turn a profit, right? They have their great TV deal. So the Cubs generate a ton of money via their unique WGN TV deal and their unique spot in the market. You know, Chicago is just this giant media market. They get great gate revenue at Wrigley Field when fans start coming back because Wrigley has so many seats and they can charge so much for a ticket, just again, you know, due to the unique way that Chicago baseball exists. And that's great for the guys who own the Cubs and who generate money from them, but it's not great from the on-field perspective. And then in terms of fantasy baseball, the guys I really like at their current cost in fantasy baseball, you know, not Rizzo, not Bryant, have not taken either of them yet in the draft this year. But Jock, I think Jock Peterson looks like an outstanding value where he's going. And then also Ian Happ, if you show me a power hitting, switch hitting outfielder, like, it's just, I'm all in. Like a guy right. Who leads off, hits for power, and is a switch hitter, like, I'm going to love that guy. And also Ian Happ has my absolute favorite swing on MLB The Show. Just so pure. I will use him all the time in MLB The Show because of the way his swing functions. So I really like Happ and I really like Jock, but Rizzo and Bryant and Contreras at their cost could not be less interested, really.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I said before, Ian Happ to me is the best value on this team in terms of fantasy return on investment. Nico Hoerner maybe is another guy too in those deeper leagues, especially in the dynasty format, to keep an eye on if he does indeed kind of win this job outright and become the everyday second baseman. I know it's not fun that he's hitting the bottom of the order, but you know, things might change if a Bryant does get dealt before spring training ends. If he does get dealt even at the deadline, you could see some fluctuation in who's hitting where. And a guy like Nico Hoerner, if he plays well, could move up the order later in the year as it goes on. But from a DFS perspective too, Ian Happ and Nico Hoerner, and even Peterson probably are going to be good values at certain times. Let's take a look at this rotation here. Now, Kyle Hendricks coming off a great year, no doubt about that. Jake Arrieta, I'm sorry, you can't go home again. Jake Arrieta's been terrible the last few years, and I'm not going anywhere near him. Zach Davies had a nice run last year, but he turned into a pumpkin. Alec Mills had some moments. Good and bad. So I don't know what you want to take away from those inconsistencies. And then you've got Trevor Williams, who is more just a pitch to contact kind of guy who's just going to, you know, throw the ball and hopefully someone's going to catch it. That seems to be more Trevor Williams' game. And the bullpen's got Craig Kimbrell. We'll see if he can hold on to that closer gig. But I got to tell you, I mean, Kyle Hendricks is probably the most valuable piece for another team. I would be shocked if he wasn't moved some point in time for the Cubs this year onto some other team. And maybe they can get somebody to take Bryant along with him in that kind of a package. But this is what happens, I think, when you have a philosophy, and it's probably the right one, it's the same philosophy that the Houston Astros had, where you're building a team off of young position players because they're better investments in your scouting department, right? Better long-term investments, everyday players. Then they would go out there and they would acquire the John Lesters. They would, you know, sign these guys free agents. They would acquire Jake Arrieta, take chances on guys in the past. And if they hit, all of a sudden that would work for their rotation. Yu Darvish, another example of that. But the pipeline for pitching for the Cubs is not good. So this is very difficult because to me, this is a really tough situation to turn around. They have to flip some of these guys, some of these sluggers that are aging out or contracting out, and get some young pitching in return, at least to kind of fortify the potential future of this team. Because right now that rotation is not a very, I would say, awe-inspiring rotation in a division that's kind of, I don't want to say mediocre, but there, I don't think there's a runaway favorite. Brewers are going to be good. Cardinals are going to be good. Pirates are going to be terrible. Reds are going to be mediocre. There's nobody great. It's not like there's a Yankee team in this division. It's not like there's a Dodger team in this division. So how do you see this rotation for the Cubs working out? Because I'm concerned that after one, there's just not a whole lot there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just also not a Kyle Hendricks guy. I know, like, at this point, his results speak for themselves, but low strikeout pitchers who get there on command and limiting walks, it's just easier for them to lose it, because obviously if Hendricks struggles with his control at all, he's just going to get beat up, because you can't throw poorly located 78 mile an hour changeups to professional hitters, right? That turns into batting practice for those guys. I think what we see is a guy that we talked about on the show yesterday, Adbert Ausoli. He is a fireballer who generated loads of strikeouts the last 2 years. His final year in the Cubs AAA system, he generated 12.5 strikeouts per nine innings. You know, obviously he's going to struggle with the home runs, is definitely a fly ball pitcher in a time in baseball where fly ball pitchers have gone out of style. But I think we will see him crack the rotation, because Trevor Williams, Alec Mills, you know, these guys are just very average starting pitchers. And also, you know, we are seeing more major league teams trend towards confirming a six-man rotation. It would not surprise me if the Cubs go in that direction just to get more innings out of Adbert. And he is the sleeper of this staff for me, because he's young, he's cost-controlled. The Cubs obviously would like to use their young cost-controlled talent and then move guys like Alec Mills, like Jake Arrieta, like Kyle Hendricks for anything, right? Saves them money, gets them some young picks, or gets them some young players, you know. But really, it's the saving money thing, I think, that's interesting. I mean, are you a Kyle Hendricks guy? Are you just one of those guys just says, I don't care about the strikeouts, you know, just give me that good whip, give me that good ERA, and give me those innings?
Well, you know, it's funny, because I used to have Kyle Hendricks on a lot of teams because people didn't value him. He was kind of undervalued. And I think coming off last year, it's just the opposite. Now he's kind of overvalued. And I'm with you. Hendricks is kind of a good major league pitcher, a nice guy for the back of your rotation. But he's being drafted more like a number, you know, high-end three, low-end two. And that's not where he is. He's more of a good low-end three and an even better four if you can get him there. Let's take a look at that win total, too, because the number is 78.5. So now we've broken down the team. In your opinion, Davis, is this an over or an under if you're going to look at this 78.5 for the Cubs? Because it feels like a team that's going to be under 500, and that's where FanDuel has them.
Yeah, I mean, you want to say under just based off of the fact that they're not really trying to compete. But then you look at the roster and you're like, you know, Jock is a pretty good free agent signing. Hap, we like. Rizzo and Bryant kind of speaks for themselves. Wilson Contreras, one of the better hitting catchers. It really comes down to, does Kyle Hendricks stay on the team for 162 games? Are they able to find some stability in the back end of their rotation? You know, the bullpen's okay. I actually think I'm going to go over, because I expect the Pirates and Reds to be so bad that they should walk into, you know, 15 divisional wins pretty easily. And again, like you said, the Brewers and the Cardinals are good teams. They're average teams, but they're not the Dodgers. They're not the Padres. They're not 100-win juggernauts. So I actually am going to go over on the Cubs. I don't think they win the division. I would not bet on them to win the division, though.
I'm actually going to lean the other way. I'm going to lean towards the under, because I do think they're going to jettison. Even if they get off to a good start, they don't think they're going to really compete for a championship. So For me, I think you're going to see Hendricks gone. You're going to see Bryant gone, maybe another piece or two, maybe a Contreras or a Baez also. And then if that's the case, they will bottom out in the second half. When we come back, we're going to do a little ADP wars on FST. So if you like lots of three-letter kind of things like that, stick around. We're going to have some fun. We'll be right back after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Spring training is in full swing, which means it's fantasy baseball draft prep time. A lot of drafts are going on, the slow drafts, the quick drafts, the auction drafts, and everything in between. We're going to help you out with some ADP wars. We're going to go through two players who are basically in the same ADP on NFBC and kind of have a discussion about which one we'd rather have. I know this crew right now is all in their Raz Slam, so they are going back and forth about all the picks that they're making, not making. Davis is putting a lot of pressure on Brett because he wants to draft. He's got this guy. He's lined up in his queue, and he wants Brett to just make his pick so he can pick. And I told Brett, don't you dare. You take your time, because he's really weighing a very important decision with two big pitchers on the board. And I said, don't you let Davis Maddock intimidate you into making a pick. But Davis, while we're waiting for Brett to make his pick, let's make some of our own here and talk a little ADP with these two guys, two outfielders, one of which we just kind of touched on, with the Chicago Cubs, Jock Peterson. And the other one is Brian Reynolds, who going into last year was a really nice, I don't want to say sleeper because there's no such thing as that, but he was really a player that people really liked as a good late round value. Last year did not go well. Didn't go great for Jock Peterson either. You look at the stats, it's kind of eerily similar. There's kind of right around the same spot there. So Jock Peterson has a much better track record of power in his career than you look at the minor league numbers of Brian Reynolds. But if you're trying to take one of these two guys just for your fantasy team, let's say in a 5x5, do you go with the proven power of Jock Peterson, or are you looking for somebody might be a little bit higher up in the order in Brian Reynolds, who might even give you a little bit more stolen base potential or something like that? Because I think you can make a case for either one of these guys. I know I have a feeling about it, but I'm curious to hear yours first. Who do you take here on the board? Do you go with Peterson or Brian Reynolds?
I mean, all due respect to Brian Reynolds, right? All due respect.
With all due respect,
Yeah. He's projected about .265 batting average, hit .189 over 208 plate appearances last year. Has a decent walk rate, but strikes out a ton. You know, about 15 home runs, about 5 steals. I mean, this is Jock, and it's Jock by a landslide for me. Now, Jock's going to hit .230, but he's given you 25 bombs minimum. One of the few guys, I think, if the MLB actually does deaden the ball, that can hit .40. He hit 36 home runs in the super happy fun year. But remember, he's never gotten full-time plate appearances. They've never let him play. You know, the Dodgers never let him play against left-handed starting pitching. He would often be substituted. You know, he would be the defensive replacement a lot of the times, because the Dodgers have always had absurd talent coming off the bench. I mean, the most plate appearances he ever got was all the way back in 2015. He hit .210 that year, but delivered 26 home runs and 4 steals. Jock is now 28 years old, so this should be, you know, in baseball years, this is his prime season. I think 30 home runs, 3 to 5 steals, .235 batting average, and I think he can drive in, you know, 80 runs, score 70, 75 runs. I mean, this is Jock to me for sure. I mean, Jock is running away with this one. And Brian Reynolds plays for the Pirates, man. The Pirates are going to be the worst offense in baseball.
No doubt about that. Make it 2 for 2 here. Jock Peterson for me as well. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember Jock Peterson coming into the league with so much fanfare, too. I mean, the guy tore up minor league baseball, but This is the danger of the PCL, right? Because you look at the PCL numbers back in the day on Jock Peterson, and they were very high batting average because of where he was playing, and all the other things kind of fell into place there. And he never quite became, I think, the superstar cornerstone player the Dodgers were hoping he would become, or fantasy owners thought they would become. And it's also a good lesson to remember, too, when you're dealing with prospects from the West, because when you have those PCL numbers, you have to take them with a grain of salt. And, you know, back in the day, if you were able to flip a Jock Peterson who was coming into the league with all this fanfare, all this hype, and you got a really good proven major league talent in place of him in a trade, that worked out pretty well for you, most likely. And Jock Peterson's good. Jock Peterson's useful. He's a better investment than Brian Reynolds, but I think we can all agree Jock Peterson has never lived up to, I think, the hype that potentially he was coming into the league with. And, you know, sometimes the bigger organizations, those prospects get a little bit more hype too. You can look at the Yankees over the years, the Dodgers. There's a lot of teams where, because they're big market teams, their prospects get a little bit more focused and they don't always deliver on the expectations. Let's do another one here, another ADP. Now, one of these guys is on a lot of my teams because I just think he's a really good major league player. And I'll tell you right now, Jean Segura on the board, I am very, very tempted. In fact, I've been so tempted, I've taken him in a few leagues. He's going at 180 overall compared to Jake Cronenworth at 182. Now, my problem with Cronenworth and the Padres is I'm a little uncertain about how much he's going to play. They signed Kim in the offseason. They have some options around there. They have depth with Profar. And Cronenworth had a nice season, but Cronenworth doesn't jump off the page to me. Jean Segura might not be the player he was a few years ago in Roto where you said, oh my goodness, big time stolen bases, all this stuff. But you know what? He's probably going to hit 280. He's probably going to hit somewhere around, you know, 15, 20 home runs. He's probably going to steal 10 bags at the end of the day. I think Jean Segura is one of these guys that's kind of getting forgotten about, along with other people too on that Philadelphia team, including his shortstop mate there, Didi Gregorius. I think these are two infielders on the Phillies that are just kind of getting passed over, proven major league hitters. Coming off okay seasons where I don't understand why nobody wants them, and that's fine. I'm good. I will take those guys. Cronenworth was a nice story, but I don't think he does enough of anything great to really get me excited about his ADP. Yeah, higher batting average, but Jean Segura is capable of hitting 275, and I think Cronenworth's capable of hitting 260. So I think you want to have a little give there. Cronenworth's not a big power guy, only the 4 home runs last year. Minor leagues doesn't show a lot of power. So I understand that Jean Segura is not the player he was, but I don't know if Jake Cronenworth is even his match right now. That's where I stand. So how about you? Where do you stand? Are you concerned, like I am, about Cronenworth's everyday opportunities?
Yeah, I just don't know where they find the plate appearances for Cronenworth, because their bench right now is Ha-Seong Kim, who I'm really big on. Like, I actually think that Ha-Seong Kim way outproduces his plate appearance expectation right now in roster resource. They have him for about 250 plate appearances. I think that he is just going to be one of those guys who's too good to leave on the bench that long. You know, I think that he will outplay Cronenworth per plate appearance. But the bigger impediment to Cronenworth's playing time is Jurickson Profar, who's a switch hitter, right? So you don't have to, have to strong or weak side platoon him. He plays against either. He plays in the outfield. He plays in the middle infield. He can even play first base. So he plays the same positions as Cronenworth, and he's a more useful player because you can move him around in game. Doesn't lefty righty, doesn't matter. I think that Profar ends up seeing more plate appearances than Cronenworth. So I'm going to go Segura here by default, basically, because I think that Cronenworth is not as good as Ha-Seong Kim and also not as useful as Profar. Cronenworth might be a better per plate appearance hitter than Profar, but Profar is just a better fit for a baseball team trying to win more games because of all that he is able to do from a real baseball perspective. So I'm going to go Segura here just based off the plate appearances.
I feel like there's a teachable moment here, Davis, and it's about Cronenworth being the perfect example of a guy in a strange season that you could circle, had a nice run, not a great run, just a nice run, and it was a short sample size, and now people are over-investing in that. And look, it's not a huge ADP. It's not crazy, but, you know, it's a sub-200 player. It's a player that's going to be on teams, and to me, Jean Segura is clearly the guy over him. It's not a contest, and I don't feel like it's a bad default. I'm actually okay with having Jean Segura. Look, in terms of middle infielder guys on your roster, you know, I think as a middle infielder, Jean Segura is pretty good. As a shortstop, second baseman guy, okay, maybe not as much. Maybe don't want him there as a second baseman, but second base is kind of tough this year too. So in the deeper leagues, I think you're just looking for proven major league talent. And I'm not sure if Cronenworth is that. And on top of that, you mentioned the other guys he's competing with. It's not really the best situation. I want to go back to about Kim for a second, because I had an opportunity to take him in TGFBI draft a couple days ago, ended up passing on him for somebody else. I'm curious, what is it about Kim that excites you? Because I know a lot of people were excited about Akiyama last year, and it wasn't until the very end of the season where he made some adjustments that he started to come on late. So do you think that Kim is going to have enough opportunities, not just in the spring, but in the regular season, to get above that 250 plateau in terms of plate appearances?
Yeah. So, I mean, Ha-Seong Kim was a 30-30 guy in the KBO, right? Like, this is a guy with a 200 ISO who also stole 30 bases. Now, granted, the KBO is like, it's probably like a double A equivalent in Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. if you wanted to compare the two, but power, speed, good defense, never strikes out, right? Like a 10% strikeout rate for his career in the KBO, will probably strike out like 19-20% of the time in Major League Baseball. But you know, a shortstop eligible player that you can get for free with good defense, who has power, speed, doesn't strike out. I mean, that's like the kind of guy you just want to invest in, because if something happens to Tatis, if something happens to Machado, right. If something happens to Cronenworth, 500 plate appearances of Ha-Seong Kim is a potential league winning style player. And if he sucks, you can just cut him.
That's true. That's absolutely true. I know the one big question about Kim going into the season is, can he hit good major league pitching? So I think that's something where, you know, we always talk about spring training being overrated for a lot of guys. It's not overrated for a player like him. If he goes in there and has good at-bats against the Kershaws, has good at-bats against, you know, some of the better pitchers there he sees in spring training, well, that's a good indicator that that's going to bode well for him in 2021. If he looks completely lost or overmatched in some of those at-bats, and again, they don't have to equate in hits. It's why you got to see the at-bats. It's why you got to watch the games, because you can study the stats all you want. You have to be able to see a little bit with the eye test. And I think a player like Ha-Seong Kim is going to have to pass some of that eye test for me before I start making investments. Let's do one more. We talked about some guys later on in drafts. Let's talk about a guy who is right at the top of the first round kind of area. It's Trey Turner and Trevor Story. Now, these guys, in terms of overall, both going somewhere in that first round typically. Now, Trevor Story is without Nolan Arenado. Eventually, at some point in the season, he could be without Charlie Blackmon too. This could be a big turnover here for the Rockies. Now, Trey Turner, I think, obviously is very much a popular player in the Roto community, has the power, has the speed. You see, last year, incredible batting average. Trey Turner was just on fire for a good chunk of that season, had more RBI even. So Trey Turner is typically going ahead of Trevor Story. So I want to kind of bounce this around in another way. Let's talk about these guys in auction. In an auction, would you rather pay the premium for the stolen bases in a Roto League you're getting for Trey Turner, or would you rather save a little of that money and you know you're going to get power, you're going to get speed out of Trevor Story, but probably at a lesser cost? Do you want to pay the premium for Story or take a little bit of the discount, the premium for Turner, or take a little discount with Story?
I mean, I want Story, because Story steals bases too, and they're hitting Trey Turner third. And it's just going to be bad for his steals, right? Hitting third instead of leadoff is undeniably bad for your steals. So maybe it moves Turner from like a high-end steals guy to like, you know, 20, 25, maybe 30. And then you're talking about, well, Story's going to steal bases too. It's not like Story doesn't steal. He had 15 in only 59 games last year, 23 in 2019, 27 in 2018. What do the Rockies care? They're not winning games. Let Story steal bases. Like, it's very Mondesi-esque for the Royals in that way. So you're getting 30 home runs. You're getting 275. I mean, Story, I think, has a chance to outproduce Trey Turner straight up, and is definitely going to hit more home runs than him. You know, regardless of the steal stuff, he's going to hit more home runs. So I would much prefer to take the discount on Story. And I also don't like Trey Turner at his ADP in, you know, just straight up regular NFBC draft. So I'm on Story here 100% of the way.
I've historically been a very tough sell on Trey Turner over the years. I thought he was a little overrated because of the high end stolen bases, but I got to tell you, in an auction, I'll take a little bit of that savings and I'll go with Trevor Story also. I think that's the way to go. Now, straight ADP, Turner's going to go before Story, especially now that Arenado is gone. So there's some ADP wars for you. We come back, we're going to talk more baseball and more action, and our fearless leader returns to Fantasy Sports Today. Fresh and tan, right out spring training. We'll be right back with your sports group right after this. Don't go anywhere. Or FST right here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to FSD. Hour one, nearly in the books. Hour two, right around the corner, and Craig Mish will be back. The fearless leader returns to take you through the rest of hour two. I'm sure he's got a lot of great baseball planned for you and a whole lot more. But before we close things out here, Davis, you made a very provocative statement early on. We were talking about Jalen Hurts. You were discussing him as your number seven quarterback on the board. Now, Dak Prescott, somewhere around six. I imagine Aaron Rodgers is going to be in that conversation for you, too. You look at some of the names, Russell Wilson, Justin Herbert. So you have Jalen Hurts already ahead of all those guys, including even Tannehill, who had a very good fantasy season.
Yeah, you go Mahomes, number one, then probably Lamar or Josh Allen, number two, Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Dak, and then Jalen. So maybe that's eight off the top of my head. But those are the guys. those are the guys you want in fantasy football. You want Mahomes, Josh, Lamar, Russ, Deshaun, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, and Jalen Hurts. And then after that, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Justin Herbert, Ryan Tannehill. You know there are other guys that we like. But those eight guys that I just named are the fantasy quarterbacks you want because they have 4,000 passing yards and, you know, 500 rushing yards, five TDs and more. Because really, if you don't have a quarterback who runs in fantasy, I know Aaron Rodgers had a very well. Aaron Rodgers had a good fantasy season last year. He really did tail off towards the end. But yeah, I definitely think Jalen Hurts because he's just going to run so much, and rushing production really is a cheat code for fantasy football at the quarterback position. So I think Jalen is going to surprise some people with how good he is in fantasy football next year.
Yeah, I kind of wrote about that last year, the evolution of this quarterback position. If you don't have one of these quarterbacks that's getting some points with his legs or scoring some rushing touchdowns, you're behind. And even those single quarterback leagues, you really kind of have to prioritize them and start to move them up. Plus, they're better investments because they're more protected by the league and the rules and the format of what's going on with the NFL is today. So lots of good talk today about NFL quarterbacks in hour one and MLB. But when we come back, Craig Mish will take over the reins and everything will be back to normal for you right here on FSD. So stick around for hour two right here on Sports Grid. Craig Mish and Davis Maddock will take you the rest of the way. We'll be right back right after this.